so please proceed.
Okay. That's never happened to me before. Well, if you could tone down your presentation, I think, you know.
You probably reduce the public outreach.
I'm sure it was
less drama.
Somehow, it's all my fault. I understand.
Give that man a promotion.
What can I do? Okay, back where we were, the idea behind the piece of the legislation relative to city-based enforcement is that prior to this, only the state had the ability to enforce any kind of rules, sanctions, or debarment against vendors, against contractors. Now, with this legislation, we have the ability, the city has the ability to work on its own. We don't have to wait for the state to do something or take whatever time they take to work around and get to a vendor who's done something, lost certification, done something as a pass-through, any of that kind of stuff. The city can issue its own sanctions, has its own ability to terminate contracts or suspend a contract or force the change in a subcontractor who has, you know, if you have a subcontractor who's lost their certification for some reason, the city could actually force them to eliminate that subcontractor, force the prime contractor to eliminate that subcontractor and hire a new certified subcontractor. It's a great deal of enforcement capacity. You know, the extent to which the city would choose to use it could be different on any given project. And it really gives the city some capacity to. We have great social equity programs. They are phenomenal. They're kind of the model for a lot of other agencies in the region. And now we have some teeth in the enforcement and protecting those programs. So that's the big part of our code change. The secondary part of the code change is updating to follow state law, which updated the small procurement limit from $5,000 to $10,000. And so we're adjusting code to accommodate that change. This is not an arbitrary rollout of automatically everything goes to $10,000. This is somewhat akin to opening the garage door before you drive the car out. And because we have to update procurement code, you know, the manuals. There's some SAP updates that'll have to occur. There's some things that'll have to occur to get that piece in place. But at least this is the front end of that. So if there's any more questions.
Okay. Questions?
I'm looking through the code language. So we're creating a parallel process that allows the state to step in where the city to step in where we, and historically, maybe the state hasn't or hasn't happened quickly enough. According to the impact statement, there's no budgetary impact of this action. So it's two questions. What has to happen to trigger city action? And then how does this, and assuming this becomes more than just an occasional investigation, assuming this thing ramps up and we're involved on a regular basis in verifying information about certification, how do we pay for it?
Okay. The probability, at least our feeling, the probability for significant increase in numbers of enforcement isn't really very high. We do a very good job now of discussing things, working with our contractors. It hasn't been a huge issue. It has been an issue, but not a really, really, really big one. So we wouldn't anticipate that we would get 1,000% increase in the number of enforcements. The trigger will come from either the Bureau or Procurement Services itself in our compliance group. We're always constantly watching the projects as they move forward, everything from certified payrolls to making sure that the subcontractor is getting paid timely, all of those kinds of issues. So we have kind of constant surveillance anyway. If there were an issue tied to that, that's where that would be the trigger point.
Right. So let's assume that it originates from the community, someone who's either providing services or has information, wants to bring a complaint. How will they bring the complaint? Where will they go to bring the complaint? And then how will the council know how that complaint has been adjudicated?
The complaint could come forward from any community member. The most logical place to bring the complaint, of course, would be to the procurement office or to the bureau in charge, who would then report to the procurement office relative to issues with the vendors. Understanding our...
Right there for a second. When you say the most logical place to bring a complaint, I'm talking about the public. And the public goes to our website and generally is bewildered by all the bureaus and all the information. So my sense is that we need to have something on a website that is very clear about receiving complaints from the public if they have information. It could be a sub, it could be someone providing services, where they go, how they make the complaint, and how that complaint is tracked. Not assume that people are going to go to our website and figure this out.
The other part of that would be the city has an excellent ombudsman's office that receives complaints relative to many, many, many issues of the city. I mean, I think some of us from within the city are a little bewildered by some of the thought process in all of our bureaus too. But the ombudsman office would be an excellent place to start. If it was just outside third party type community member, I think that'd be the logical place to start. I don't think they would go to procurement. They probably wouldn't know to.
Well, the ombudsperson may or may not want that additional burden. And our experience is she normally gets the complaints that have not gotten attention through the normal channel. So I just think this is something we ought to think about. If we're saying that we're taking on a new enforcement protocol and we are saying that we're taking this seriously, there ought to be some transparent way that complaints come in and that people can get that information, not have to go to the ombudsman to find out or just call a random bureau. And then there should be some way for us to track over the next year. Do we get more complaints? How has this particular change in the law impacted the community, impacted our work? I encourage you to consider that just as part of the rollout.
Well, I think if that's a council directive, that's something we could certainly put in place, is, you know, some kind of a thought process we could get back to the council's offices as far as a, you know, some sort of report or some sort of format you'd like to see.
And Mayor, is this a council directive? Mayor's nodding. And I just say that we sometimes hear anecdotally from the community that they have concerns about someone providing services. And we're not really in a position to deal with it. And historically, the state does it. So if we're going to have a city enforcement mechanism, let's set up something so that those complaints can be brought to the right person, be dealt with. And I wouldn't start with the ombudsman.
Okay.
At her office. She's not really the place, in my view, where complaints should come first. They usually come there after people have not gotten recourse through other means, in my experience.
Okay.
Celia Heron with OMF. I think your point is well made in terms of a clear communication, especially if now the complaints are going to Boley or to the state. We want to make sure folks know, well, when do I take it to the city, when do I take it to county, when to the state. So I think your point is well made in terms of getting information, presumably on the procurement website, and information out to the community members. So it's clear. Because in addition to syncing up with state code, this is broader than just public contracting. It's where the city has social equity goals. This gives us an enforcement mechanism that we didn't have previously. So I think the point is well made that the communication ought to be very clear. Council's intent with this, these code changes, are more than housekeeping in sync. It's really adding some teeth to the social equity goals that we've got.
Good clarification. Thank you.
Other questions, comments? Anything else that you two wanted to cover here? Steve, did you have something? Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. All right. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Anyone like to speak on this item? Come on up.
Yeah, I could use my degree in electrical engineering on this thing. I've noticed after the Second World War, a lot of construction workers were heavyset, light male types that, you know, can do physical stuff. But there have been improvements lately in like a hammer. They have these nail guns now that use air pressure. A woman can do that. I saw a woman lineman. Instead of like going up the pole, right, they just put this thing in it. It was raining, and they had this tarp over her. It wasn't so she wouldn't get her hair wet. It's unhealthy for a guy to do the same thing. So there's been improvements in electrical technology to hoist people up in the air, to do electrical work on telephone poles. Recently, buildings are only like 10 stories high, and actually, if you have one of these cranes, you don't have to lift anything. The crane is overhead and lifts things up. So technology has changed things, just like in the South, they used to justify slave labor by saying, we don't have the machines to do that, when the North was pioneering the tractor. And I think affirmative action is always helped by increases in technology. Like I say, nobody drives a nail anymore. They got these nail guns. And women can do that. So women can do these kind of jobs, and you can't just opt out and say, we have to have the guy because he's strong.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, anyone else? Then let's please take a vote on this item as an emergency ordinance.
Saltzman?
Well, this is a very important change to be able to enforce our own laws around procurement and the use of minority women in emerging small businesses. It's very important that we know that when we award a contract to somebody that they actually are going to use the minority and women subcontractors that they present to us they're going to use, and that those subcontractors are all appropriately certified to do the work. Again, I want to thank our city ombudsman, Margie Solinger, Procurement Services, James Posey, and certainly want to also acknowledge my chief of staff, Brendan Finn, for his excellent shadow role in helping this problem become addressed by our state lawmakers. Pleased to vote aye.
Novick.
Back when I worked for the Federal Justice Department doing environmental law enforcement, our bosses used to say, you know, the Soviet Union had great environmental laws, but they had nobody to enforce them. A law without enforcement capacity is a meaningless law. So this is an important step, and thank you very much. Aye.
Thank you for your work. Excuse me, one step at a time, and we're making improvements. Thank you. Aye.
Fish.
Yeah, thanks to the auditor and the ombudsman, to Representative Frederick and Senator Denbrough. To you, Commissioner, and your staff and your team, and to Christine Moody and the folks that went down and testified or helped the legislature get there. And I'm pleased that as part of this, we're going to also be thinking about ways of streamlining the receipt of complaints from the public, maybe even have a little icon on the website, and then some way to track that so we can measure our progress. Thank you, Dan, and thanks to everyone for their good work. Aye.
Bales.
Good work indeed. Thank you. Aye. Okay.